Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Hump Day Hangout with Fire Engineering and the Clarion Events Group. And we're here today to have another great discussion with all our friends out there that hang on to Fire Engineering and our Hump Day Hangout. And we just got Chief Heller on from the International Society of Fire Service Instructors. And also on with us today is MacArthur Williams. He's an instructor for Traditions Training, and we have a special guest, Nick Wilbur, from Emergency Vehicle Response, a great group that obviously has a great reputation, and especially since we're going to talk about equipment and apparatus today, and knowing its limitations and driver training and anything else that we kind of want to discuss. So we got them on the group. So I guess we'll kind of get started, because you never know when MacArthur Williams, or Mac as we call him, is going to have to go, because you know, he's at this thing they call a busy engine company in Washington, D.C. And at any time, they could be called out to help the citizens of Washington, D.C. So Mac actually came up with the topic for today, and it's kind of discussing equipment and knowing its limitations and obviously having capabilities also all at the same time. So we're waiting also for Sammy Hiddle to get on. He was just getting back from a run, and with Chief Heller on here, I know there's more than one topic that he's wanted to discuss, talking about driver's training and at one point also. So we'll have him cue in also. But just to go with MacArthur to start with, you know, we're going to do Mac with the engine company stuff, Nick with truck company, Sammy with rescue, and then me and Aaron will, our Chief Heller will cue in whenever we kind of have a chance to get in there. So Mac, first of all, what is so special about these engine things that carry water and hose and stuff? What do they do, I mean, exactly?
It's the backbone of the fire department. That's what's special about it. That's what puts the fire out. The main priority. You're going to need the engine company. So the big importance, a lot of things, well, one, we get a lot complacent. So that's a big issue when it comes to some of these engine companies, is you get stuck in your ways, or you don't go out train, you don't go out to check your local alarm area. They're putting up new buildings, new constructions every day. The area is changing and the surroundings are changing. And the only way we could get better at our job, or get better at, you know, mastering this intercompany operation, is to get out in these areas. Because some of these new buildings and areas have buildings that don't have any type of suppression systems. So, which means you will have to run a pre-connect line. And some companies don't have long enough pre-connect lines to, you know, get into certain areas or get into these buildings. So the only way you can actually figure out, or when that time comes out for it, you get that call for that address or that surrounding, you know what line to come up with, or you know, hey, we need 600 feet to get to this building, or we need 600 or 800 feet sometimes to get to this address, or we need to run a flying standpipe, or we need to drop a line out the window. Like, there's so much, many obstacles, or there are many things that you will be faced with. But the biggest thing is you have to get out in the area to, you know, check on these buildings and see what type of line or what type of situation we're going to do when we pull up to this address.
So, I mean, Max, give everybody kind of an example. So, I mean, you got a new building in your first due, and, you know, you're going to go out and look at them. And obviously we're going to look at, you know, our access issues. We're going to look at fire alarm systems. But how do you, I mean, it's not like you're going to drag an 800-foot line through this building that's brand new being built. I mean, what do you guys do to figure out how this line is going to reach the building?
We have a little wheel that pretty much, as we roll it through the building, it tracks the feet or the distance. We also have this a rope that's on a wheel as well, that's like 600 feet. So we'll start at an entry point, and then we'll run it around to the furthest point of a building. So, for example, one of our buildings is 600 feet from one end to the other end. So we know we catch a fire in this building and it's not showing, and we come in on the Charlie side, and we start at the Charlie Delta corner. We know if we come from there and get to the other side, the fire is over there, it's going to be 600 feet. So from there, I already know that we're going to run a leader line. My job is going to be to run the 200 feet of 2.5 to an entry point to the stairs. The rest of the crew is going to disconnect the 400. And then attach it to the 2.5, and that will get us throughout the entire building. But the only way we knew that is just going out to it, and then we ran the wheel from one end to the other end, and we figured out it was 600 feet. So anytime that address come out, we know we're going to need 600 feet of hose to make it from one end to the other.
Now, Mac, is this an older building or is this a newer building?
That one is an older building. Now, for the newer building, it was the hallway is just too long. It's like 1,000 feet, and there's no standpipe in it at all. So at that point, we just have the driver and the officer just have to communicate with each other. Once he go in and do his CAM report and check, and then from there we will get a line in place. So I would run the 2.5, and they would hook up the 400 to it. But their newer buildings is kind of crazy because you would think it would have standpipe or any type of suppression, but it doesn't at all. And there's no pre-connect line that's going to get you through that building at all. So for that, it's just going to take some coordination between all of us just talking to figure out how to get a line in place once they get inside and figure out where the fire is.
So, engine guy, so you're stretching a 600-foot line. I mean, what kind of, you know, there's going to be people that heads are exploding now and wondering how the gauge isn't melting off the pump panel while you're trying to supply GPM. Sammy, that we're talking about water, so, you know, you can just take a pause. You know, it's okay. But so how do you get, what kind of flow are you looking at the end of this 600-foot line?
Well, for us, it's going to be a liter line because we can't run any lines in the District of Columbia that's longer than 400 feet technically. But, I mean, your frictional, you're just doing 30 per 100. So we're going to hook the 400 to our 2.5, which will reduce your pressure at that point. It's not going to be 600 feet of 1.5 inches, the quote. But you can run 600 feet of 1.5 inches. I've done it before. And we pump it at roughly about 250.
But so what kind of flow are you getting at the end there? I mean, that's probably the question.
You're still getting, well, at work, you would get 125. Here in the county, you're getting 150 at the tip.
All right, because, I mean, you know, obviously with our residential structures and multifamily dwellings, NFPA, Chief Heller, correct me if I'm wrong. I think I'm right. It's 150 gallons per minute. So.
Yeah, so with the newer nozzles now, you would get 150 at the end.
And Chief Heller, I would think that Washington D.C. probably needs to do something with building codes, but I'm not.
Yeah, well, you know, getting building codes and getting everything firefighter friendly is a lifetime achievement award, I think, if you can do it, especially in the big cities, you know. Smaller towns, smaller municipalities, I think they've got a better shot than we would see in the big cities. But you're right, you know, you're shooting for that 150, but the situation is going to dictate what you've been training on, what your pumps are going to be able to do, what your hoses are. You know, a lot of departments are still running old hose that you know has problems. We were teaching up in Massachusetts, and damn near every 1¾-inch line we pulled out had a liner problem with it. So it really does depend on each place, I think.
And Mac, what are you using for hose there? What in your two places, I guess?
1½. So here in PG, we still have 1½ here at Kentline. And at work, it's all 1½ on all the wagons.
And what's the kind of manufacturer using? It doesn't, you know, we're not sponsored by one, so it's okay to talk about it.
I'm sorry, what was that?
What kind of, who's the manufacturer? Do you know who manufactures your hose in DC? And
some of it is, I want to say it's Pond.
Okay. Yeah. I know Pond's pretty big. So
I want to say it's Pond that's the manufacturer for the hose.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously, when we're talking about all this, we're talking, you know, flow is probably the biggest thing. So, I mean, what kind of calculations are you using? I know you mentioned 30 per 100, but what kind of calculations are you using to get your pump pressure so you can get that 150?
Well, yeah, we're going to use 30 per 100. So that's just based off of that actually changed recently. Prior to that, it was 40 per 100. But then after they did some testing with different hoses and different nozzles, it actually reduced to 30 per 100 because they were figuring out we were actually pumping at too much at some point. For our calculations. So even at 30 per 100, we're still able to master and get that 125 or the 150 gallons per minute with that calculation.
And what nozzles are you kind of using? Because I mean, still we go 30 per 100 and you're going 400 feet.
So well, we're here at Elkhart. L card nozzles.
So I mean, what's their nozzle? What are you using as a nozzle pressure?
You broke up. I'm sorry.
I said, what are you using as a nozzle pressure?
As a nozzle pressure for the L card?
Yeah.
So you're getting 150 gallons per minute, and for your calculation for that as well, it's 30 per 100.
Yeah, but I mean, what is the calculation you're using for the nozzle? So, I mean, you have to have a nozzle.
Well, it's 75 PSI. It's 75 PSI.
Okay, yeah, that's PSI. What I was looking for. All right. Yeah, Sorry if I wasn't phrasing that correctly for you.
Yeah, it's 75 PSI for the nozzle, and then for your every 100 feet is your 30. And then if it's 15 feet, if you're just using 50 feet, so if it's like a 250, you would just do 30 and then add 15 for the 50 foot. And that's how you get your calculation at 75. Most nozzle now should be 75 PSI.
I got you.
For your pressure.
So, I mean, I know we did a bunch of stuff with flows and hose and nozzles here recently, and we found that to achieve our flow, we couldn't find the math to match it up. Aaron, have you found that with some of your teachings that, you know, not having the good math?
Not having a good math, what do you mean? Just for,
I was talking to Chief Heller. Chief Heller, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, yeah. So what we've come across is having the different style of hose now, having different attack packages now, where there's actually been some really good research put into it by some brilliant math guys, which I am not. So I'm like the last math guy possible.
Two of us.
I haven't pumped a rig in a little while, certainly at work in about 20 years, but other than drill. But anyway, what we found is, and going around places, if they've done good study of their own on what their rig is going to be able to support, what they're going to be able to do, are they operating in a rural environment where they're working off tankers? Do they understand what flows they're actually getting? You know, I went to a place not long ago and they're running all inch and three quarter line, which was great. You know, nice. It was new Mercedes. I don't recall exactly what it was, but you know, they had just put it in service. They had just put L-cart nozzles in service, the XDs with 7/8 tips. So which we'll be celebrating 7/8 day, you know, this week. So that's a big deal in the engine guy's life. But on top of that, what we found, they stretched the first pre-connect and they've got a 15-foot pony coming out of the pre-connect of inch and a half. And the guy's telling me all the calculation they did when they bought this hose. And I said, well, did you look at that? And he said, nope, didn't even know we had that problem. So it goes back to really each company, each department doing their due diligence. In our department, we're running mostly key Big Ten, although we have some other stuff there that's left over. So the chauffeurs they really got to know what they're doing, and they have to know what their package is. And the other thing too that I've found is in a lot of places they'll run a smooth bore on one line and a combination on another line. So they've got to know who stretched what. And again, that goes all back to our training.
All right. Well, Mac, we'll get back to you here in 1 minute. So, I don't want to get to Nick here because Nick's a big truck guy. I was just telling him before I just read his class proposal for FDIC, and it's about truck stuff. And obviously, I got a bunch of new trucks on order. So, but one of the things that we found when we ordered our new trucks is that we didn't ask enough questions. Nick is a career firefighter in Arlington County, Virginia. Obviously, which right outside Washington, D.C., and a volunteer in College Park, Maryland. Once again, in Prince George's County, right outside Washington, D.C. And they got ladder trucks like we got. And then we didn't, I don't think either one of us asked a lot of questions because we were just so hyper-focused on a 14-foot jack spread. So let's talk about, you know, some of those, you know, we talked about envelopes and all the stuff with tip loads and jack spreads. So, Nick, why don't you share some of your some of the stuff that you experienced with those ladder trucks you got in Arlington. So,
yeah, so I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. This whole thing of not asking questions is huge in the fire service. We kind of all get plagued with it because we are the trusting type as firefighters. That's kind of how we're born and bred. And the best class I ever took at FDIC, the opening salvo was says who with what proof. And I took that question to heart ever since. They rolled out a section of 50 foot of inch 3/4 hose that was purchased from the showroom floor, and he measured it, and it was 46 feet long. So we talk about long lines, a 600 foot line, 50 foot sections, right? You know, you're 6 feet short per section. You're almost the whole entire 50 feet by the time you get that 600 foot line. So it's huge things that we just kind of are a trusting bunch. So we go in this ladder truck, first time it was, you know, it was made and manufactured and engineers made it. So they had to know everything that was going on. And honestly, until you make it and put it out there, you really just don't know. And so we just have to be diligent and ask the questions. And sometimes, you know, you don't know, so you don't know what questions to ask. But hopefully conversations like this between, emergency vehicle response, our company, Traditions Training, all these guys out there traveling the country and teaching, they're picking up everything and bringing it with them. And that's helping us get the right questions and get the fire service what it needs. So this 14-foot jack spread is phenomenal, a 500-pound tip load. There's a couple of different configurations too. If you wanted a 750 tip load, you're about 16 feet, 2 inches. And if you wanted to get down to a 12.6, I believe, off the top of my head, you can have a 250 tip load. So it really comes down to your jurisdiction and what you need. But more importantly than the big thing up top, we're looking at ground ladder storage too. So to kind of echo the engine company's idea of getting out into the first do, this is huge. Like Mac was saying, buildings are built every day. And if you're the fire chief taking the same, same commute to work back and forth, you don't see that big five-story in the front, five-story in the rear building that was built times four in your first do. And here you are carrying a 28-foot ground ladder on your ladder truck. No access to Bravo, Charlie, or Delta sides, or the 2, 3, and 4 sides if you're from New York. That's a big issue, right? You know, we just don't see these things going up. Doing some of the aerial needs assessments and fire department studies that we've done, we go in and ask, hey, what's the longest ladder? Oh, 28 feet. We don't have these big buildings. And you drive them around their first do, and within the first 15 minutes, their jaws down to the ground. Holy crap, I didn't know. And it's, you just lived in that town, grew up in that town. Not the blinders on purpose, but those blinders are on. You don't see the things being built around you. So definitely big and huge to get out there and set up the truck and throw those ground ladders.
You said about questions is that, both you and I bought ladder trucks, and I don't think either one of us asked enough questions. We got great rigs, I think, at the end of the day. Why would I want a 1,000-pound tip load? Why would I want a 750-pound tip load? Why would I want a 500? And then, exactly where is that measured? And then how does it increase? I don't want to get Sammy, who is a mathematician, involved in this, those are some of the questions I guess we need to answer.
Yeah. So, looking at your tip load, everybody wants that 750 or 1,000-pound punch because that's, more is better, right? Just like people look at the inch and a half, hose line. Yeah, I know, truck guy talking about hose lines. It's weird. I just felt weird doing it. I'll probably go take a shower later. But everyone gets sucked in that. But what's the end goal, right? For the inch and a half line, what's it flowing? You ask the greatest question in the world. I don't really care what size the diameter is, but where are we going with it? And what's the water that's flowing out of it? Same thing for a ladder truck. We got a 750-pound tip load, but what are you using it for? If you're staffing a ladder truck with two people and you have a 750-pound tip load, really, what are we doing? and where are you setting it up is a bigger question too. So for us in Arlington, we don't have these major thoroughfares. We're going on tight streets and we need to get up there pretty high. So, the 500-pound tip load, we went from a 750 to a 500-pound tip load, knowing that we can bring that jack stance in. It's a training curve, but obviously we're up for it in Arlington. We go out there and use our rigs and run the calls with them. So it makes it a little bit easier. Talking about measurements too, The measurement, you know, the height of the ladder is a big thing. You know, we get people getting 75 foot quints because they don't have very tall buildings in their area, but 85% or more of the fire service, we're using the aerial ladder in the horizontal plane more than the vertical. We need that reach. Not every house was built right off the downtown USA street. We got all these big setbacks that we're trying to get to. And with limited access and going under wires or around trees, things like that, to get to these buildings. So as we measure the aerial, there's things too. You look at, you know, XYZ manufacturer has 100 foot, XYQ has 102, and then Z manufacturer has 107. Well, what's the difference? Really, the aerial length is all about the same, but one manufacturer chose to measure from the ground to the tip with the outriggers just flat. One decided to jack the truck up and add 18 more inches into the penetration of the outriggers. So now the tires are off the ground and now you have those extra 2 feet. And then same thing for the last manufacturer, they have now 20 inches of ground penetration and they added on just a little bit longer of a breakaway section at the end of the tip. So everyone kind of has their little ways of measuring. So if you're not asking the question of how'd you get that measurement, what's my horizontal reach, what's my jack spread, how many jacks do I have? You know, that's going to be a huge thing. You know, the greatest pictures in the world, if you have a good salesman, they're going to come show you the fire truck at the Macy's parking lot on a Sunday, you know, during off hours when the parking lot's empty and it looks great when it takes up 16 parking spots. They're not going to take you downtown in the tightest street and set this fire truck up so you can actually see what it's going to do when the building's on fire and everyone's kind of counting on you when you need it. So just being that informed consumer. And, you know, the best piece of advice is get training before buying a ladder truck, not after, and seek out advice and counsel, whether it's a professional company, obviously like EVR, or the many others out there that help spec fire trucks, or just someone that's done it. You know, between Prince George's County and Arlington being next to each other, the conversations that have been had and will be had back and forth is the most valuable thing that you can have. You know, any mistakes that were made on one side, we're correcting on the other side. And, you know, we have pretty large fleets and turn over our fleets pretty quickly, which is huge. We have that advantage where no one else does. So I think that's the biggest thing is just seeking counsel and anything that you look at. And then, you know, we can talk about pre-pipe waterways too. I mean, there's a lot of things where, you know, pre-pipe waterway versus not. I know in College Park's truck, when we spec that, we went for not because we were surrounded by trucks that had them or tower ladders, right? You know, we have a specific rig to do this job. When you have a 75 foot aerial scope next door, that's going to go up in the air and flow water down and get those storefront blitzes. Really for us, it didn't make sense. And it was a cost savings of about $50,000. And this year someone's going to buy a $2 million fire truck. So that $50,000 savings is huge for some trying to pinch those pennies. So.
And Chief Heller, I mean, obviously you have a unique response there. I mean, what with ladder trucks there, what are you looking for there in your jurisdiction?
Yeah, because we're such a different, you know, everything from very, very tight urban areas to wide open, you know, farm fields that just popped up vinyl villages of million-dollar homes. Right now we're operating a 100-foot TDA and we operate a 100-foot mid-mount tower ladder. The TDA has been assigned to special ops as well. It was in a house that was very strong in special ops and that it's always been that way. So we looked at it from a couple different points. Number one was accessibility. At the time when we were buying these, money was an issue, but it wasn't nearly the issue it is today because I think these now are 2014s, somewhere in there. We're due to replace a tower ladder this coming budget cycle in 23. And, you know, as Nick said, we're looking from a financial standpoint now of looking at, we had 1.5 million budgeted and 1.5 million doesn't look like it's going to do it for what our original spec was. So, and I don't see, you know, I'm not involved in the politics of it so much as thank God that's a level above me, but, I don't know what we're going to do there. We're going to have to look at our spec. And again, it's a needs assessment. And in a department like ours, we're not about the bells and the whistles. We really aren't. So it's not about the extra chrome or the extra glitz. It's got to be all about functionality Can it fit down our streets? Can we get the outriggers set where we normally would set our outriggers? You know, we do like the idea of in the commercial setting, having the opportunity to set, if we're going with another tower, which this one's supposed to be, you know, can we get the down to grade level so we can do work on commercials, you know, at street level, as opposed to just going vertical. That's been a big thing that we've trained on, and the guys on the tower have done a lot of work on getting themselves kind of fluent in that. It's the same problem, Rick. It's we're such a varied area that do you go with another mid mount? Do you go with a rear mount, or do you, you know, are you looking at another TDA? And it's simply, a lot of it's going to be finances, unfortunately. A lot of it's going to be just a lot of homework's got to be done by the guys who are going to spec it. I won't be involved in that at that point, would be my guess. But when we did it before, tip load was an issue. Whether we wanted to go with a heavy duty ladder, whether we wanted to go with a medium, we won't go with a quint. That won't happen in where I work. But where I volunteered, we went with a quint. It was, you know, we only had so much money and so many guys, and nobody had anything around us. And that was the thing at the time. But now when they go to replace that, I have no idea what they're going to do, because their needs really haven't changed, but the fire service has. So that's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, 1.5 million to get you a mini pumper with a 24-foot ladder mount on the top of it.
Yeah, maybe a little skid pump in there with it, right? Yeah.
And the 24-foot ladder will take you 18 months to get in, too, so you'll get it after the truck's delivered.
Yeah. You know, one thing that Nick did say, too, and I forgot to address it, was I can tell you when we were buying the volunteer rig, and this was all the way back, the specking started in 99. That truck was delivered in 01, and that's why they're due to replace it now. But when we were buying that rig, I insisted on a 40-foot extension ladder on the back of that. And man, did I get my ass handed to me. A lot of guys were like, you throw the damn thing. I don't want to throw a 35, let alone a 40. But what we find is, and especially for those in the rural setting, and guys with in places where they have lots of hills, you know, you've got two stories in the front and you've got a walkout basement in the rear. And that 35 may not cut it if they dug out that basement and patio area quite a bit to get more space there. So you may not be able to reach those third floor windows in the back. And obviously the stick isn't going to bend that way. So that was one of those, oh man, we don't want this, but we spec'd it, we put it on the rig, and it has been used. So as Bill Carey says, right, all firefighting is local. Knowing that you've got what's in your first due, as MacArthur said with stretches, you got to know your response areas. And that will dictate what you put on those rigs, hopefully.
So Mac, I guess, I think Sammy called a run. So we'll kind of go back to you, and Nick had some stuff on this also. So, I mean, obviously you got this red thing behind you on your background that carries water and stuff. So What makes that so special to you and special to your response area that's different from, you know, Mid-America or a company that carries 1,000 gallons of water? I mean, what makes that work for you? I mean, other than your vertical challenge issues that you have personally, you know,
I mean, what makes it special is one, in the city, there's a hydrant on every corner, so 500 gallons is perfect for us. We don't have a problem when it comes to water, or we don't need 750 or 1,000, 10,000 gallon tanks. So, like I said, we're a nice big city area, 500 gallons, a little wagon like that moves great around the city. It could get into tight, small areas, and we have 1.5-inch holes, which we can maneuver and push inside of these buildings quick. That's what works for us. It works well for us, and it's been that way for years. It's just a tradition that I had to get used to and learn. So now it's my pride and joy. And obviously, it's going to always be that way. Just engine company is where it's at. Nothing against the truck guys, but I mean, at the end of the day, they always looking for us at when they're down that hallway and they got too far ahead. So it's a good thing. Like, that's why I love it a lot.
So Mac, let me. I read. I was doing some review. We were talking to Nick. I did some reviews of some classes last night. And I looked at this class, and they said you know, life before water. And, you know, so when you talk about water, people seem to think that you never use your tank water. So how do you establish the water supply? And then how do you supply that initial attack line for the first couple minutes? Because when I read some of these things and listen to some of people rant or get on their pedestals, I don't think they understand how an engine company that you, myself, Nick, and I'm sure Aaron are all used to in the Northeast, how you do an operation and how do you supply water to your attack line? Because, I mean, you get water in seconds and then you have a sustained water supply. So kind of explain that process. And then we'll let Nick, I'll let you jump in here. So
obviously at work, it all depends. Like an area is busy. So sometimes I could be first due somewhere where I'm not supposed to be first due. And sometimes I could be first due in my stack. Well, the third due engine who's picking my lineup can be coming from far out, fifth or sixth due area. So if that situation happens, then yes, we have to leave someone. If we pull up and it's on a working fire, we have to have someone pretty much at the hydrant to charge it. But usually, if not, if it's just a normal box, we just lay out and put it in pump and I'll charge it off the tank. And then as soon as I get someone pick up my line and I get a water supply, I'll just pretty much close my tank once it's back full and just save that just in case I have a problem with the pump or just because I have any type of emergency, I will have that water to, you know, radio to my crew just in case they have to back out depending on the situation.
So you're laying a supply line in, which takes you seconds.
Yes.
And then you're charging your inch and a half off the tank water and then waiting for your supply to be charged.
Yeah, just hook the supply up. And usually if it's a normal box, the third due company will be there quick enough to charge it and send me water. Well, yes, initially we're going off the tank water.
Nick, do you got something else different from that or?
No, so in Arlington, we have 750-gallon water tanks, not because we necessarily need the 750, but more for the resale value. Our replacement plan is we don't have a fire truck in Arlington older than 8 years old. We've done math and the statistics, and when I say we, not me, they. They found out that between maintenance costs and the value of the rig, at 8 years, we can defer maintenance costs and we can get the most value for resale. So we don't really necessarily need 750, but we have it there anyway. It's great when you're an engine driver, because for me, it's less pressure. I can just mosey on over the hydrant and get water supply, and I got all the time in the world. But I think at the end of the day, when you're specifying your apparatus, kind of like you alluded to, Chief, it's what you want. The mission of the vehicle comes first. There's a lot of people that want this nice, shiny red thing, whether it's an engine, a ladder truck, or a combination of everything all in one. You have to figure out what your actual mission of the vehicle is. We were working with a customer in New York that wanted to combine their rescue squad and their ladder truck into one vehicle. The biggest complaint for the rescue squad was it was too large and too heavy and no one wanted to drive it. And we look at, okay, well, that stinks. So let's get you a nice small ladder truck, put a couple tools on there. You run 5 or 6 cut jobs a year, not a big thing, nothing major. And you have other rescue squads around you to bring other tools if it becomes a major job. Well, we went to, we want to carry everything we did on the rescue squad. So let's put an 80-inch cab. Let's extend the body out. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You just complain because people don't know how to drive or don't want to drive this big thing. Now we're making another big thing. And it's just newer now. So we got focused in. We got to the mission of the vehicle, and, you know, we're hoping that obviously when it comes down the line, it's going to be exactly what they want. But having those people in there to kind of coach through the process is huge. Same thing with an engine company. For us in Arlington, and specifically College Park, we like to charge standpipe racks or charge standpipe risers. So we have our front bumper line at College Park has the ability to flow 500 gallons a minute. So we put that in our spec as a performance standard. We want to be able to hook up to any discharge on that engine and flow at least 500 gallons a minute. So the piping of your hose lines is huge. Everyone talks about hose packages and nozzles and all the friction losses there. But when you look at some of the piping, when you take that fire truck apart, it's all different. So you can have some discharges that you're getting 800 or 900 gallons a minute. And then the next one right next door is getting 690. And that's a huge difference because the friction loss and the flow is just way different. So like you alluded to, Chief, you know, making sure that your whole entire package is ready to go. So that's testing every single line, every single discharge, measuring everything out just to make sure everything is right. And any new section of hose you get, it's the same thing, because same manufacturer can be manufactured just a different way. And we know that by going out there and drilling and testing our stuff, not by sitting in the firehouse and hanging out.
Chief Heller, did you have something you wanted to add there? I'm sorry.
No, I totally agree with Nick. We have seen that, especially in departments that have mixed up apparatus. We've got a bunch of different manufacturers. You had a bunch of different guys writing specs. You may have full flow valves. You may have valves that are not full flow. It really is important to do those tests before you get this thing on order and before you have really, really committed, because those aren't things that are easily changed once you go down the road. And a lot of guys have done that. And the other thought too is where you're working, where you're responding to. Are you in that rural setting? So with us, our latest order, we've got one engine on order. It's a 1,000-gallon booster tank, because although they cover a big section of hydranted area, they have 11 square miles that's not hydranted. So we gave them more water, and the configuration of the rig is a little bit different as compared to the guys who are working in our urban settings. Our standard has been 750, which is great. And we're a little bit different. We don't always lay in, where I know PG and DC and you guys have a strict, my brother-in-law is a retired PG guy, man. He cringes that we don't lay in on every fire. And, you know, I think he wants to put his foot in me every time he hears me say it, but we don't always lay in. But our second do is absolutely reversing out every time, just about. So if they don't lay in, second do is taking it back out. We're still providing a water supply. Our guys have found that with that 750, they can stop a whole lot of fire and do a whole lot of good work for the most part with 750. If they can't get it with that, we're going to be there for a little while. You know, one thing I know you guys in the training world are saying, everybody's teaching canned confidence courses now, right? Everybody's got a canned confidence course. Every little training company that's popped up in the last, 6 weeks, they've been fighting canned fires forever. I learned canned firefighting, honestly, from Champ probably 20 some years ago, that I actually learned it the right way. And we've been teaching it for a long time. One thing I would say, teach how to fight fires with water cans when things go wrong. And certainly the truck needs it to hold things in place. But man, we got to make sure that a lot of these guys don't just think that's their answer now, because I mean, there's so much social media of that. And we just had this conversation with a few guys the other day about it. And it's, it doesn't replace a charged line protecting the guys doing the searches. So.
And I think that's my biggest complaint, is listening to training companies, and we preached, land a supply line forever. But I got to the point where it's, you need to be fast getting the application. Your tank water, your supply line, how you do that, as long as you can do that uninterrupted and within your tank water, whether it be 500, 750 or 1,000, a lot of my problems I saw was that people could not stretch and apply water to fire in a reasonable amount of time. And then they want to blame water supply, laying a supply line or the second do engine. That's what they want to blame it on, rather than their inability to stretch and apply water to a fire, because that takes practice, a lot of practice. And obviously, Mac, I mean, how many times a day do you practice stretching a hose line?
Well, at work, we run lines. Well, the other day, we about 4 or 5 times, we actually put holes in the ground and stretched the line and packed it. And I also do it, just did it yesterday at the training academy through work, just stretching and showing how to make loops and push loops into the buildings and push loops down the hallway. A lot of times you just see that backup or that layout person, one, just standing at the door and pulling hose, versus I just tell them, hey, just stand behind it, look at it, push it in, make it to a loop and get behind that loop and roll it down the hallway or roll it inside or push it inside. Work easier, make your life easier, because if not, you're going to stress yourself, overwork yourself, and then you're not going to get the job done because you're going to be too beat. So, but we practice a lot running hose and putting hose on the ground any opportunity we get.
So, I mean, I think that's a big deal because, you're doing a lot of runs during the day.
For sure.
You do one or two runs.
You said one or two?
Yeah, you do one or two runs a day, right?
Yeah, we do about one or two runs a day. No, we do about a good 15, 20, sometimes 30. It all depends on the day. But during that time, man, we do get a drill in, and we go to our challenging areas, or we'll find just a building and say, hey, let's see if the 400 will reach from here. Because we have some places where we can't get the wagon into the complex, or if we do pull in, we're going to block the truck out. So we would just sit out on the road, take our own hydrant, and let the truck pull into the parking lot. So if that's the case, then we ought to run a longer line. But every day we just find a building, or we say, hey, what building we want to go to today? And we go there and we can get the opportunity. We'll put some holes on the ground and run some lines and pack it up.
So, I mean, Mackie, even on, if you're running an odor of smoke, I mean, you're stretching an attack line now.
Oh yeah. Every time we run, we put an holes on the ground and we're stretching a line every opportunity that we get, even for odors. It's so just even practice.
If you don't get a chance to drill, you're making use of the call that you're running that day to get some kind of training.
Yes, of course. Any opportunity that would be our drill. If like the other day we ran multiple boxes, but each one we were able to stretch a line. So that was our drill for today. Every time we ran a box and we was able to stretch a line, and a few of them were fire. So it actually was just a good day for us.
And Nick.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can echo that 100% on either side of DC between College Park or Arlington. Arlington, we're growing and we're 26 square miles, but we have 9 firehouses, 9 engines, 2 rescue squads, and 3 ladder trucks. Pretty busy department. And, with the growing department, a lot of people retiring, trying to expand out and cover all the new buildings and people moving in, kind of compacting in and going, taller. We're out there training all the time. And the best statement I heard when there's two, one during one training, someone said, I didn't expect to come to work and train today. And my response to that was, what did you expect today at work? they don't call it sleep. They call it work. So I'm not really sure. But it was great. He was grateful for, getting out there and doing it. And I think it was just that, depending on the station or location or where you get assigned or who you're with, people just kind of relax. So be that person, be that drive in the firehouse to go out there and train. And then number two was when asked to throw ladders and how they would do it on a real fire, they said, well, I'll figure it out when it's on fire. And that was another statement that was like, okay, well, show me now, because when it's on fire, you're not going to figure it out. I can guarantee you that. So going out there throwing ladders is the same thing. And I appreciate Mac's sentiment of getting out of the way of the ladder truck. Just remember, you can stretch hose, you can't stretch ladders. So for those rare occurrences where the engine does block out the truck company, that's where those ground ladders come in. So being able to adapt and overcome. And, I've seen a couple pictures out there on Facebook and two ladder trucks backed into each other to throw their aerials to a two-story house and blocked each other's ladder beds out. So not one single window had a ground ladder to it, but there was a tower and a straight stick to the roof of this two-story house. To me, it's just some of that is kind of interesting of how you're training and how where your priorities lie. Just remember, those ground ladders are mostly for us too. So
I mean, let's go back to ground ladders, because we'll ask Chief Feller what he carries in his jurisdiction. So I mean, what is a good ground ladder compliment, Nick? What give us a good ground ladder compliment?
So I think it goes back to the entire picture, and knowing your area, knowing your staffing is another one. And people use staffing as a crutch to not put ground ladders on there, right? But it's not even just the number, but it's the variety. If you have a ladder truck with, 245-foot banger ladders and 335s, that's a pretty big number. It seems impressive, but with the staffing of two and you're running one-story houses, it's not really fit, doesn't really fit the application. The NFPA is a guidance and, to be honest, needs to catch up to some of the times, but they allow 85 feet of ground ladders on quint type apparatus, and they require 115 foot of ground ladders on a straight truck. If you look at 85 feet, that includes the folding ladder. So you take 10 feet out for a folding ladder. You got your little giant combination ladder at 14 feet. We're already 24 feet at 85. You put a 20 foot on the stick. Well, there we go. We're almost 45 feet out. So now you have 40 feet of ground ladder. So you can put a 24 and a 20 in the rear. And that's your ladder complement that the NFPA says is your minimum. And if you go to any town USA, that's just straight not going to cut it. So it's really getting the help if you don't understand, but doing your research. The other thing is manufacturer ladders. The difference between the big two out there, Duo Safety and Alkalite. Alkalite has great banking widths. They're a little skinnier to bank in a ladder truck, so you can fit more, but they're a little bit heavier. Duo Safety is a little bit lighter, but has a thicker banking thickness. So your staffing comes into play. If you have three or four people on the truck, you want to put a little bit more Duo Safety out there because of the weight. It's a little lighter and you can get more bang for your buck when you're throwing ladders. So I think for me, you know, College Park, we're just chock full ladders, but we're riding with seven or eight on good days when we have all the people in the firehouse to throw those ladders. In Arlington, we're running 235s, 228s, 216s in the back. And then we have 216 two section ladders on the side. And that allows us to get compartmentation because we also have extrication equipment on our ladder trucks, but we didn't sacrifice the ability to put 16s on the truck. So it's kind of that middle ground where the extension ladder cut it down to a 19 foot or 9 foot instead of 16 feet on the side. So it allowed us a little bit more compartment space. Then we have a 14 foot on the aerial. And I think that's huge, being able to kind of go to the side, go to the rear, having a little bit of, you know, variation in ladders. One thing I would like to see is a banger ladder in Arlington, but you know, that's kind of one of the future things, I guess, once I get higher up in the department, hopefully, if I ever make it there. The best picture, and to end up the ladder discussion there, I mean, the best picture I ever saw was six Montgomery County police officers with the driver of truck 716 on a three-alarm, five-story walk-up apartment fire where the fire started on the second floor. And ran the entire building in a pipe chase and chalked the entire stairwell with smoke. As soon as you walk in the building, zero visibility from first floor all the way up to fifth. So anybody in there couldn't evacuate out the single stairwell in the center. They made a rescue off the fifth floor of this building of three people. That's a bunch of police officers that didn't know anything about anything, but if you don't carry the ladder with you, you ain't gonna be able to throw it. So anybody that says we don't have the staffing for it, the Montgomery County staffing is three people on a ladder truck, and it took one firefighter to throw that ladder. There's a lot of people out there that will help and do great things when they're asked to. If you get one educated person there that knows what they're doing and trains on it, they can help. A lot of people can pitch in and help and make the rescue. If you have Montgomery or PG not there and you have other jurisdictions, that rescue wouldn't have been made, and we would have been singing a different tune here. So just make sure that you're checking those ladder trucks that can carry the ladders that your jurisdiction needs, and don't fight and provide sea level fire protection because you don't think that you can get it up there. You have other excuse, you know, be that change in the fire department to get the job done.
Before I get back to you, Chief Fellers, that, you know, Nick brought up a great point, is that once again, asking questions, and I have a different job than Nick, Mac and Chief Hellers, that I get to deal with all the maintenance and stuff like that. Is that we went to spec a ladder truck like Nick talked about, and, you know, we were like, how many ladders can we jam in this thing? You know, let's jam as many ground ladders as we can, different lengths. And so to do that, we had to use Nick's story there of, yet we were able to put a Duo Safety here, we were able to put an Alkalite here, and we put another Duo Safety here, we put an Alkalite here, and it all fit perfectly, and we got 310 feet of ground ladders. And then it came to ladder testing time, and I realized how many rungs I had to carry the different ladders and how they have to be welded, and I'm like, all right, man, we need one type ladder, and we're going to have to sacrifice length. So, because we just don't want to carry all these different rungs and then how you fix them. So, Chief Heller, what are you carrying on your TDA and your tower for your jurisdiction?
Oh, there I go. So I can tell you, I've never been assigned to either of those companies. I've been an engine guy my whole career. So they have done a great job of mixing it up, making sure that they've got, and I don't know the exact ones on there, and I should, but I don't at this point. But I know that we've got a good mix of 28s, 24s, 20 straight, 14 foot straight. They've done a real nice job with it, because that was one of the issues back in the pre-consolidation days where everybody just ran what they wanted to and nobody had any kind of coordination with it. And that was something that they talked about. And in the very beginning, when we did consolidate, the two truck companies got together and developed a standard marking system. So they color coded the tips of all their ladders. So, you know, if you've got a 28, it's lime green, or if you've got a 20, it's got a red tip, or whatever the case was. So I really, really like that. In fact, I could always throw up some pictures of those because I took them out of, it was kind of a pride thing to see all these truckies get together and come up with a good plan for the new department. So I was really, that's one of those things that was really good. What they did find, I know, was because of such a varied area, because of, you know, everything from ranchers all the way up to, you know, multi-story, basically urban areas, you name it, they needed to spread it out. And they based everything that they've been doing on what their needs assessment has been. So when they bought that TDA, it was, this is our second TDA. When they bought the first one, it was a big deal that they were going to that and what the complement of ground ladders was going to be, because in that area, in that neighborhood, you have mostly 2 and 3 story, ordinary taxpayers, things of that nature. So looking at your parapets, looking at the rears of those, that's what they were setting up for. The tower company covers a big commercial and industrial area, so they had to look at it from a little bit different perspective there. So that's really the clear part about that. What I really liked, and Max said it and was describing how many times they stretch. The unofficial training, and Nick brought this up too, about guys wanting to get out there and doing it. The unofficial training, not the stuff put out by the training division or the, you know, the bosses, but the stuff when the captain says, hey man, we might not have done a great job throwing ladders on that. Let's get out there and do it. That's the best. And the fact that you have, and you still have them, no matter how bad people say the fire service is, we still have really motivated firefighters who want to get out there and do that work and show their professionalism and even challenge each other, which I think is even better because that motivates more. So those types of trainings, since we're talking some training stuff, I couldn't be more happy to hear, you know, Mac talking about it and Nick talking the same thing. It just, it does you, that's the bottom line. And knowing their capabilities with their portable ladders, you know, you talked about, I talking about who has two guys on a rig, who has one guy on a rig, three on a rig, getting it down the alley and getting it set, you know, can they do it by themselves? Sammy's got all these great videos out there of him throwing a 35 by himself. He's like a freaking Superman, dude. If I did that, I wouldn't have any shoulders left. Right. And we're probably, and I think Sammy's probably older than me and he could still do it. But the bottom line is it's getting out there and knowing your capabilities and getting it done. Because again, it's that old story of be the fireman that you want coming from your, for your family. And that's the whole key to everything we're talking about.
Okay. Well, we're kind of getting close down to our hour. Mac, did you want to wrap up some thoughts here? I mean, this is kind of your kind of idea, and I'll certainly chime in with quickly before I let you go. I'm sorry, I'm going to jump in real quick. Is that, you know, there's, you know, just looking at the rig that's behind Mac, you know, there's, or, you know, if Nick had his ladder truck from either College Park or Arlington behind him there, you know, and this is echoing on Chief Heller's comments, is that there's always something to drill on. I mean, there's, you know, the pressure governor on engine 15 is a drill all in itself. I mean, what does it do? How does it operate? You know, there's people that don't understand that. You know, they just know you turn a knob and this is what's supposed to happen. They don't understand that, you know, the transducer. They don't understand, you know, that every line, how it accomplishes, you know, there's a drill on that rig for every day of the week. And, you know, just the same way for on Nick's ladder trucks, there's, you know, you can open a compartment and there's something to drill on. And, you know, with today's, nobody wants to be out there for 2 hours. You know, it's just, you're going to lose an attention span. I'm, you know, it, and that's just the way it is. It's just, so, you know, 15, 20 minute drills, half hour drills on whatever's in that fire truck is, you know, there's a portable monitor. There's, you know, anything that's on there, we can have a drill on. And, you know, it doesn't have to be, if you don't have an air conditioned bay or it's a hot day, like it is here in Washington today, it's going to be 100 degrees and 90% humidity. There's something we can find a drill on. So Mac, I'll throw it back to you. What about, you know, understanding your equipment? You know, what do you do to get people to do that?
I sit them in front of them and like, tell me about it or teach me about it. And we go from there, and it leads from one discussion to another. Some of the big things we do drill on is one is area, because in the District of Columbia, we don't have map books. So one, first and foremost, you have to know where you're going. So every day when I get into work, I ask whoever's on the back step, all right, pick five boxes, five short streets. Boxes are pretty much our response routes, and short streets are streets in our area. Pick them, and we'll go over them, and then we'll pick up a few stick maps and complex maps, and we'll hit those. And that'll be the start of our drill. We'll do an area drill. Then after that, I'll say, okay, out of one of these maps that we covered today, let's go there, and we'll run a line. We'll run a line to that building. And then from there, like the other day, we simply just went over the SCBA, something that we all take for granted and we forget about just how it functions and its failures. So that was a drill that we can hit on. Or then sometimes we go over the distributor nozzle. Like you said, when you made your comment, it's so much equipment on there that we can touch on and we can go over. So just make the point that every time you come to work, I always tell everyone, learn something new every day. That's the main priority. Learn something new every day and teach something. Teach me something today. And every day when they come to work, they know that's what we're going to do. We're going to drill on something. We're going to learn something new and hopefully go to a fire.
And hopefully go to a fire.
No.
Do you have any drills on the beat? Do you have any drills on the BP cuff and the stethoscope?
We get plenty of drills on those. We do about 6,000 medicals a year. So yes, that's there. I'm a driver, so all I do is sit there and pull the brake and lie, right, see you when you come out. But yes, that's the main drill is BP cuff, the monitor. Yes. Oh, that's, they got that down back. Perfect. That's something that they will never forget. We get a good amount of practice in that.
Nick, go ahead. I'm sorry. I had to get that BP cuff one in. So,
hey, we all face it. It's all good. There's nowhere to get away from it. That's for sure. Very few places anyway. To echo the same thing, I think for us, having a lot younger department in Arlington, there's three things when you're driving a fire truck to know. It's obviously driving, which is overlooked a lot. You know, a lot of people, here's the keys, go ahead and get her going and take her around the block. You did your 24-hour EBOC class and you're ready to go to respond down tight streets and drive fast. Don't really hit home the implications that if you run a red light, go through an intersection and kill somebody, that's manslaughter and you go to prison for it. So I think that's kind of overlooked in the training world sometimes and talking about. And that can be hit multiple ways between just driving your area, let the new guy drive, take that pressure off and kind of teach him that way. Second thing is operation. And then third thing is area. I know in DC, they don't have map books and they don't hit it hard. And, just for us in Arlington, we're focused on the driving and the operation first. And the area is kind of third, right? We have cell phones now, we have all these pre-plans, we have map books, we have GIS maps. So for us, getting the directions, the officer helps guide the person in, helps look at the pre-plans. When we're out there looking at our buildings, we're writing up pre-plans for everything, and they auto-populate in all of our apps that we use. Obviously, it's not the greatest thing in the world, but when you have younger departments or younger firefighters in a department like that, you only can drill so much and train on so much. And for me, when I leave that fire truck, I'd rather them know how to operate that thing by themselves as an engine company driver than know the directions how to get somewhere, but not know how to operate it when they get there. So I think it's that levels of training and kind of putting that importance out there. They're all three things are important, but you just really have to figure out as a ladder truck driver, when you spot that fire truck and you throw that aerial, you got one shot. Once you pull that parking brake, it's game over. Second do engines in there, second do trucks in there. The battalion chief will come in And depending on who it is, they could be, mad that you blocked out their view of the building and they could get in your way. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen out there. Nothing against Chiefs, but, it's just a lot of stuff that, that it's just a lot of stuff that can happen. So, basically that operation is huge. And for me, the brand new guy that comes out of the fire academy, first thing I show him is how to jack the truck up and operate the aerial. And it's kind of jumping the ship. But if I ever climb that aerial and I need it somewhere else or someone else pops from a window, everybody should know how to operate that piece of machinery. Same thing with an engine, right? How to charge a line and how to shut it down. God forbid something happens to me. Or something happens to a hose line and I'm out getting a water supply, everybody should know how to the minimal operation of those vehicles. It's never too early to start with anything. At one point in time in one of my careers, I was told that it'll be a long time before I drive a ladder truck, so I shouldn't need to start training on it. And 8 months on in the job, I was driving a ladder truck. So anything can happen. And, just getting out there and training. And again, just to echo everything I've said the entire time, get help, whether it's like the chief was talking about with a needs assessment, aerial needs assessment, engine needs assessment. If you don't know, seek help. Neighboring jurisdictions, companies that do it for a living. Same thing with specifications. We've had people mess up and not want to spend a couple $1,000s to get an expert to come help them. And they're spending $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 6 years down the road, putting new frame rails in on a fire truck because they didn't take the proper steps to protect the underside of their fire truck. So mistakes that you can make, especially now with a $1.5 million budget on a ladder truck, if you make one mistake and you miss one thing on a checkbox, that's a huge thing that when it comes in, you're not going to have the money to make that fix. And it goes back to the maintenance stuff too. You don't do it right the first time, you're just going to be spending the money down the road. So.
All right. Chief Heller, you're closing us out today.
All right. Well, it's been an honor like always. And this is an important topic. It's a really important topic because if we can't get them there on the proper piece of equipment and we don't know how to use the apparatus, once we get it where we need to be, none of the rest really makes a difference. So it's the ground floor. It's the foundational part of it. And I just think it's do it, set your stuff up, buy the equipment you need based on your needs, not on what the FDNY does or somebody else does, not something that's going to be really cool and flashy on social media, but what's going to work for your community and what's the best investment. Because this is, even 8 years in Arlington, 8 years is a long time to be stuck if you bought a turd. You can't polish it. So, you want what's best for you and for your people. And that's really the key. And the more we train and the harder we get out there and the motivation that we find to do that, it just makes us a professional fire department. And that's what it's all about. But I appreciate it, Rick. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So, look, obviously you can reach Mac through traditionstraining.com. Nick, it's emergency vehicle response. They can reach you and Chief Heller. It's training associates, right?
On scene training associates.
Yeah. I apologize.
Yeah. No worries.
If you got any questions about what any one of those talked about or want to talk about it further, please reach out to them. You can reach me through Traditions Training. We'd like to thank Chief Heller and the International Society of Fire Service Instructors for joining Traditions Training and our guest, emergency vehicle response today. As always, we thank Chief Bobby Halton, Fire Engineering, and the Clarion Events Group for our ability to do this. We love talking fire trucks. We love talking fires and we love talking training. So, we're only 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. What are we? 7 or 8 months away from FDIC. So we'll be getting updates from Chief Halton here soon. So, hopefully everybody put in to teach at FDIC and, we'll be, seeing some class, reviews here shortly and see you out there in April. But from Traditions Training, International Society of Fire Service Instructors, hey, have a great afternoon, and thanks for listening.
Take care, guys.
All right. Take care.